Bigfoot. Is it from another dimension? Is it another alien species? Or is it an ancient primate? This mystery has been going on for thousands of years. Today we talk with Mike Dupler as he tells us his encounter with Bigfoot. His book, On the Trail of Bigfoot, is a first-hand account from a paranormal researcher and skilled outdoorsman. Mike has been investigating the Bigfoot phenomena for many years. We will talk about his own encounter, and does he have the proof? We will find out on Truth Be Told. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to Truth Be Told Studios for the first time, author, paranormal investigator, and Bigfoot hunter, Mike Dupler. There he is.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. Thank you so much for the first time to be on Truth Be Told. I'm excited to talk about Bigfoot. It's been a while since we've talked about the subject on Truth Be Told. And I thought we'd start today, as you know, we've talked about UFOs and many ghosts and paranormal activity, but we always seem to have our own story. So I'd like to start today with Mike Dupler's encounter with Bigfoot. Could you tell us about that?
I've lost your picture. I have a screen that says take a health and wellness break on Zoom.
Well, if you want to take a wellness break, you can, but right now we're still live. I'll try to fix that as you talk about your story.
Okay. What got me interested in this, well, I had an interest to begin with. I've seen the documentaries and that type of thing on TV as I was growing up. I was in Oregon with my daughter. I actually do ghost hunting also, and we went to the Shanghai Tunnels in Portland, and we stayed at a cabin in a Oregon State Park that was halfway between Portland and the ocean. So one morning we decided we'd get up and we'd drive out to the ocean and spend the day. And we're driving the back roads in Oregon. And I noticed out in a field that there were these trees that were stuck in the ground upside down.
Right.
So I took pictures. I had watched a documentary called Missing Monsters of Alaska. And one of the segments was Prince of Wales Island, where the locals said that the Harrymen would take blown down trees and stick them in the ground upside down to mark territory. So I saw these trees like that, and I says, man, could that be Bigfoot doing this? So when I got back to Ohio, I got my sister and drug her to Salt Fork State Park outside of Cambridge, which is supposed to be the hotspot in Ohio for Bigfoot. We didn't know what we was doing. We just parked a car and we were walking this path that goes around the lake, and we wandered up a ravine, and we decided we'll just sit there a little while and just listen, see if we can hear anything, whatever. So we sit in there, and my sister looked down and saw what looked like a track pressed into the leaf litter. I mean, it was the perfect outline of an 18-inch Bigfoot track. So that was our first encounter with the Bigfoot evidence, and we found it in the very first place we looked. So we decided that we would come back from time to time and check it out. I'm from Columbus, and it was about an hour and a half drive to Salt Fork, Cambridge, so it wasn't too bad. So we went back a few months later to the same area, and we climbed the hill where at the bottom of where we were sitting. We climbed up the hill because we saw what looked like bent trees at the top of this hill. So we climbed up there and we saw this classic Bigfoot structure. Now, Salt Fork is a hot spot, so a lot of people go there. So I'm just wondering, okay, did somebody set this up or something like that, you know? So we looked around, we took pictures, and not knowing for sure if this was an actual Bigfoot structure or something that somebody made up or whatever. But I found out that the people who investigate at Salt Fork usually go like on overnight camp outs or group organized group events, that type of thing. The BFRO does camp outs and stuff like that. And the times that we were there, we never did see anybody else in the woods investigating. So we went back from time to time, and every time we went back, I would take pictures of this structure. And I noticed over time that the structure had changed. Branches or logs or whatever were added to it or taken away, just subtle changes. And that led me to believe that this probably was authentic, because nobody would go back there and just change one or two things on it from time to time. And I'm thinking that this could possibly be a way that they communicate, being so scattered that people can look at this and say, you know, Aunt Betty's in town, or right, Julianne's pregnant, or whatever, you know, whatever message they want to convey. But changing that message changes what, you know, what it says or what they want to convey.
Well, let me ask you this. So you said the structure. So are you saying that the Bigfoot is known for creating, you know, like not buildings, but like structures for like sleeping or resting or storage, or what is that?
Primarily, the structures that I've seen are simple. They're not intended to be shelters. They're more of a way to communicate. Hmm. I have found what they call nests.
Oh, okay.
Which there's pictures of them in my book. I found this huge, what looked like a nest, which is just like wires or bushes or whatever piled up and then hollowed out in the center. But I don't think that these were where they live. From what I've seen of these, I found a couple, is that they're more likely a possible hunting blind or even strategically placed shelters in case a storm blows up or something like that. I don't think we have ever found where they actually live.
You said you found a footprint. Did you make any molds of that, or did you take pictures of that? And also around that area, did you find any different types of hair that was possibly from Bigfoot?
I've looked for hair samples, but they're difficult to find, especially in an open environment like the woods.
Right.
We have weather, rain, whatever, you know, wind coming through. I do have seven footprint casts that I've made.
Seven. That's great.
And a handprint that I cast also.
Is the handprint, is it like our hand, five, just very big? Five fingers?
Knuckles.
Knuckles.
Yeah, I wish I had a picture here.
Yeah, I wish I could have. I guess I should have probably pulled some pictures from your book and showed them. But
I had a picture on my screen.
Oh yeah, there you go. But did you ever like bring that find to, you know, like news media or other experts? Did other experts come in and do research of their own to set up you know, surveillance or their own research due to your findings?
Not really. I go to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference every year, and I have displayed them there. Do you know who Lauren Coleman is?
I've heard the name. I don't know personally, but I know the name.
He is the curator of the Cryptozoology Museum in right. Portland, Maine.
Maybe that's why. Yeah, yeah. Maybe.
And he saw my prints, and he was impressed with them, and I actually made copies and sent them up to him for display.
Hmm.
So he's got copies of those. And there's pictures in my book of where I actually cast it. I have one here on the table. If I could get a picture so you can see me, I can show it to you.
I'd love to see it. And then while you're looking, just so the people that's watching already, It's called On the Trail of Bigfoot, tracking the, I can't read, my eyes are really bad right now. I can't read the fine print, tracking something. I can't.
Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest.
Oh, there we go. I've got to that 50-year-old stage where I'm starting to, I'm starting to have to squint to read the fine lines. Well, that's interesting. I mean, that's interesting. You said that was, it's a hot spot. You've heard other people around the area of sightings. Has anybody else found footprints or made copies of it?
Like I said, like the BFRO and other organizations have campouts to where they take groups of people out at night, and they actually do like howls and tree knocking and that type of thing to try to initiate a response from them. They have been sighted there, but usually where I have gone is not where they've been sighted, because I kind of have a theory about that myself.
Well, what's the theory? And why do you think your area is so known for or known as a hotspot? Why do you feel that is?
Well, that area, not only Salt Fork State Park, but that whole area is called the Bigfoot Triangle, where sightings have been going on for many, many years. I think, well, the theory I have about the sightings is that Bigfoot knows us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They pattern us. And when there's a Bigfoot sighting, everybody goes there and looks for Bigfoot, okay? And that's a fact, because that's what people do. They start marching through the woods looking for this and that, you know. And I think that they intensely let themselves be seen to draw us away from areas that they don't want us in.
Ah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Why do you think Bigfoot is, because even when I, not too long ago, maybe about 10 years ago, I guess that's long enough. I'm originally from a small town in Kansas. My sister and my brother-in-law were out in the woods because, you know, it's a country town. And they said they saw an upright furry creature, which that's the only time I've ever heard of a incident in that area of a kind of what you would consider a Bigfoot sighting. But what do you think Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, whatever you want to call them, what do you think they are? Do you think they are possibly another alien life form? I mean, it's hard to believe it's just a primate, ancient primate that's walking the earth and they just disappear so easily. But what's your theory on that?
They are flesh and blood. I don't believe they are alien or interdimensional or anything like that. I believe they are just flesh and blood creatures that have adapted so well to the environment that they are the masters of their domain as much as we are masters of our domain.
How do you think they become so? I mean, how have we not captured? I mean, we've captured, you know, grizzlies and you know, gorillas and apes and all kinds of different types of species. You know, how do they keep their population going if there's so few of them? Or maybe not, but if there's thousands of them, you would think we would actually be able to capture one or at least interact with one.
Well, there's more of them than what you think.
Oh, really?
I have found. They are not common, but they're not uncommon. There's more than what you think is out there, and they're closer to us than what you would believe. You would think that they were in the Pacific Northwest and they're miles and miles and miles back in the forest, which they probably are. But in the eastern United States, they're not too far from us. When I investigated at Salt Fork, I didn't go miles back in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I went a quarter of a mile, no more than a mile back in to find evidence. There's one area that I went into that's maybe 100 yards from the road, and I cast 3 footprints there in the month of March, but in 3 consecutive years.
Wow.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they were only maybe 100 yards apart, like it was a travel route or something like that, but it wasn't far from the road.
Do you think, because we always hear about footprints that are huge, you know, big footprints. Have you ever caught, or not caught, have you ever saw maybe, you know, young Bigfeet or Bigfoot or children of, you know, the adults of Bigfoot? I mean, how have you ever seen like a family markings of Bigfoot?
I have a juvenile footprint cast.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Wow, that's unusual.
Can you look at this? I was in that area I was telling you about, but I moved farther back in.
Right.
And this was in March, April, that type of year, time of year. But when I go, I like to go that time of year because after the snow melts and the rain starts,
right,
all the mud is all nice and ooey gooey and it leaves good tracks and stuff. But I was walking back in the woods and I was following a game trail and there was one track where it broke through the frost into some moss and it was juvenile print. There we go. Can you see me now?
Oh, I can see you.
Yeah. Okay, I can see you.
Oh, perfect.
My wife fixed it. She's my technical assistant here.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think what this did was it walked along the game trail. It didn't walk in the game trail, but when it crossed, it broke through the frost into the moss and left a track. And I cast that track.
Hmm. And so, do you keep all your? Oh, is this it?
This is.
Oh wow.
One from Salt Fork. It's 18 inches.
Damn, that's big.
Long and 6 inches wide.
That's like Shaquille O'Neal.
And yeah, there's only one of them. Like I said, I've got 7 of them. I've got a knuckle print that was like 3 knuckles coming down like that.
Is this
instead of a flat hand?
Right.
It's like that.
Was it next 2 feet? Tracks?
No. I think what it was it was in brush or leaf litter and it just pushed itself up and it just happened to leave a print in the mud.
Got it. Yeah, I was going to wonder if it slipped or something. Well, I have a question when it comes to your research. You know, we heard about the structures. What other facts that we know about Bigfoot, whatever you want to call it, Sasquatch.
I believe Bigfoot is singular and plural.
Yeah, like it's like deer. You don't say deers. but what are some of the facts about Bigfoot when it comes to what to look for? Because, you know, a lot of us walk through the woods, you know, many national parks, millions of people that go into these national parks, but a lot of times we're just looking around, looking at the trees and climbing on some logs, but we might be missing a lot of signs of Bigfoot. What do we look for when we go to these forests?
Well, I'm in Tennessee now. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And okay, there's an active area in Tennessee that I investigate. There's never been a reported sighting there. So nobody goes down there and investigates it. But what I do is I drive down these old country roads, these old dirt country roads and stuff, and I look for tree structure sign. The most telltale evidence would be bent trees. If you see an arched tree that's anchored, that usually tells that there's something there. That's like a signpost. Because the Bigfoot, they walk these roads. They walk to pass the least resistance. And I have found plenty, I mean, lots of structures that way, just driving down roads. Look for the bent trees, and then you look for types of structures. But you have a couple of things to look out for. One thing is it natural? You look for root bases. You look for, could somebody have done this? Does somebody live nearby playing a joke or hoaxing or that type of thing? And then the type of structure, there are books available that give drawings of various structures. Hmm. And you can look at that and say, well, this is this type of structure, this is that type of structure. But the main thing you want to look for is if it's not natural, if it has been placed there, and if it's something heavy that's been placed there. Right. That's one thing to look for. That's mainly what I look for when I begin. And then from there, you can go further back in. You can look for tracks, right. Tree breaks, broken branches, that type of thing that will give you an indication that something is in there.
Well, how do we know, you know, just because not where I'm from, but actually there has been some bear sightings, but it's very rare in Kansas. But in most of these national forests, there's bears and, you know, grizzlies and brown and... And how do we know that grizzlies have not, you know, broke the branches or bent the tree trying to climb up the tree or whatever? How do you know the difference?
Well, usually if a bear does that, a bear will leave scratch marks or claw marks on a tree as it's going up. Now, in Ohio, there are very, very few bears in Ohio.
Right, right.
So that really wasn't a factor. But here in Tennessee, there are bears. I've seen some bear sign, but I've never seen a bear in the woods, primarily because they're nocturnal and I go during the daytime.
And what do we know anything about the dietary needs of Bigfoot? Is it meat eaters, more vegetarian, vegan, the local vegan store? I mean, what do we know about their dietary?
Well, they are the hippies of the woods. Yeah,
right.
So.
Right. Peace, love, and hugs.
The thought is primarily they're meat eaters, basically deer. Hmm. There's been a lot of reported deer kills where the legs are broken so they don't run off, and then they scavenge from that. I believe they're omnivores. I believe they'll eat vegetation also. Cattails are a good source of protein and starch, but they're everywhere. Just look for a wetlands. One thing that I found is usually where I find Bigfoot, there's usually a bunch of sassafras. Now, I don't know if that's a factor or not, but people have used that for medicinal purposes. They might use it for a medicinal purpose. We don't know.
Right.
I'm sure they're intelligent enough to be able to determine medical plants.
Well, what I want to do is I'm going to take a quick break because coming up in June, truth be told, myself and I have some new co-hosts coming in that we're going to be at the Contact in the Desert. So we're excited that June 25th through 28th, we're going to be interviewing a lot of the speakers. And also, I'm going to have the great fortune of introducing some of the speakers in their first virtual event. And, you know, as most of us know, Contact in the Desert is usually a in-person event out in Palm Springs. So what I'm going to do is just show a little video. So when we come back, Mike, I'd like to talk about communicating with Bigfoot and how do we attract them through noise and frequency or whatever that is. So don't go anywhere. I'm talking to Mike Dupler. He's the author of the book On the Trail of Bigfoot. I mean, the hairy beast, right? Or the hairy hippies of the woods.
There you go.
We'll be right back.
You start to ask the question, it unfolds the fabric of space itself, how it's made, what is it made of?
not alone in this universe. We never have been.
Alien intelligences have cohabited with us on this planet for millions of years.
We inherited the obsession from the Anunnaki.
Anyone that still thinks that we're the ones that are obsessed with gold does not know enough about the true history of our species, how we came to be here, and the conditions that brought us here.
We are not unique in this universe. Extraterrestrials do exist. We are, so to say, the copies of them.
Well, we're back, and yes, if you just saw the video of Contact in the Desert, please go online, contactinthedesert.com, get your tickets to the virtual event. I'm going to be hosting and also interviewing a whole bag of amazing speakers from the event, and I'm excited to be a part of their event for the last 7-8 years. So, but we're back, and we have the amazing Mike Dupler. He has a book, and it's called On the Trail of Bigfoot. We were just talking earlier about his encounters. We were talking about their dietary needs, and he was saying that they like to chew on deer once in a while. And cattails, and where I'm from, there's plenty of cattails and there's plenty of deer. So, well, Mike, I want to ask you, that before we went to break, of communicating with Bigfoot, because I've seen many videos and of screams and weird sounds coming from the forest. You've seen tracks, you've seen structures, but have you ever heard a Bigfoot, and have you ever caught a Bigfoot on any type of recordings?
Okay, I'll tell you about one encounter that my sister and I had. I like to drag her along because I can run faster than she can. But we walked this dry creek back a ways, back to where some caves were, and we heard what's called a tree knock, which is like taking a baseball bat and hitting a tree. And I believe, from what I've heard, the context of that would be that there were humans in the area. It was just a single tree knock. So what I did then, I had my camera with me. I took random pictures into the woods, just firing pictures off around me in the woods. And I caught 4 of them hunkered down in the brush watching us. One was in a tree. The pictures are in my book. All the pictures that are in my book I have taken. So you have a tree knock. On 2 separate occasions, I've been growled at, which means I'm too close, back off. And there's nothing in the Ohio woods that growls like this. It sounded almost like Godzilla or something. Here in Tennessee, I was walking an old logging road, and I encountered 2 of them. I actually saw one step behind a tree, and I heard 2 screams, which sounded like a scream like a woman from an old horror movie or something. And I've heard whoops, but I've never heard the howl yet. But like I said, the groups that go out on these camp out and adventures and stuff like that, they'll go in and tree knock, and they'll hoop and they'll howl and whatever. But I don't do that because I don't know the context.
Right.
If something is howling at me, I don't know if it's telling me, you know, I'm pretty or what.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, if I don't shave my back, I might fit right into with the tribe. So,
yeah. But they make various sounds that they know what they're talking about. And if we try to imitate them, we don't know what we're doing. We could be, like I said, we could be giving them a mating call or a war chant or whatever. That's why I don't do it, but a lot of people do to initiate a response.
So, well, I mean, especially if you're walking in the woods looking for Bigfoot at like 2 o'clock in the morning and you hear one of these screams, I probably would walk the other way as fast as I could. I mean, I I don't mind saying I scream like a little girl if something in the woods is chasing me. So, so do you think they're, I mean, I'm going to assume they're not too aggressive because we haven't heard too many people being attacked by Bigfoot. You know, we've heard of mountain lions and bears and everything else, but why do you think we have not heard of someone or many people attacked by a Bigfoot?
Well, in the 1800s, there was a hairy man attack near Salt Fork, but then you don't know what was going on there. But when I go in quiet and respectful.
Right.
And if somebody's going to go in acting all crazy and stupid and tearing up the woods and leaving trace and stuff like that, they could incite, you know, violent activity. But usually, from what I've seen, if people go into the woods, even if they're investigating them, they just watch you from afar.
Mm-hmm. Well, growing up in Kansas, we used to go out deer hunting, and we used to also go deer antler hunting.
Right.
And so why haven't we ever found bones or the remains of a dead Bigfoot? Why do you think that is?
The theory is that they bury their dead, but I don't think they bury them like we do. I believe that they bury them in mounds, and I think that could be how the Native Americans developed their mound building. It was copying what they saw from Bigfoot.
That's interesting. That's a theory I haven't heard before. That's an interesting thought. So have you ever talked to Native Americans about their history with Bigfoot? Because we've heard it many times from the Native Americans in their culture.
I've never had the opportunity, but there's a segment in my book, back in the 1800s, especially in the Ohio Valley and that area, the farmers, when they were clearing the land, would find mounds, and they would have giant bones in them, and they thought they were the Nephilim, and I think what they did was they reburied them as not to be out of favor with God or something along those lines. But there's many reports of giant bones being found in this manner because they were clearing the land for agriculture.
Right.
And it could very well be that these giant bones were not Nephilim or giants, but actually Bigfoot, because the Bigfoot is the only known bipedal giant.
That is true. And I've interviewed several people on the discoveries of the giants, and that's another great theory of why this might be possible, is Bigfoot might be the case here. That's an interesting thought. So do you think Bigfoot, I mean, it would be hard to believe if they didn't have an intelligence, they would definitely be found, because human beings, I mean, even if I went out to the woods, unless I just went and climbed into a cave, eventually if I died, somebody's going to find my bones or find me, period. So they must have some type of intelligence to know how to stay in hiding, or at least if they're not going to be in hiding, to be able to camouflage themselves. So what is your theory on their intelligence?
Well, I think they're as smart as we are. But they are as in control of their domain as we are of ours. So they are the masters of the woods. There's one picture that I took one time. It's in my book also. I was investigating in Salt Fork, and the shutter motor went out of my point-and-shoot camera, so I was using my night vision camera that I ghost hunt with in a daytime mode, and I was just taking pictures into the woods, and I took a picture of what looks like a Bigfoot face impressed in the environment. Now, what came to mind when I saw that was a type of maybe astral projection, that type of thing. Remote viewing.
Yeah,
that's what came to mind.
I've heard about that.
Remote viewing that the CIA is reported to use.
Right.
But I've never been able to duplicate that picture. And I've gone out with most of my specialty cameras in the woods taking pictures, and I've never been able to duplicate it. So it might have been just a one-time occasion, or it could just be me making faces out of the, you know, out of the bushes or whatever.
Right, right.
It's strange, and it did strike to me that this could be a self-defense mechanism that they use, is to be able to remote view in an area.
Yeah, I've heard that about Bigfoot possibly being able to remote view, like a intuitive. I've heard that about them.
Right.
What do you think about, I've heard even theories about Bigfoot being ancestor of the Neanderthals.
The pictures that I mentioned, that they were hunkered down in the brush and stuff like that.
Right.
One picture is fairly clear. And if you look at the Patterson film, Patty walking down the path or whatever,
right,
that is definitely a gorilla.
It looks like a gorilla.
Gorilla lineage. And yeah, the picture I took seemed to be of gorilla lineage. I don't think these are human ancestors, direct human ancestors. I believe they belong in the primate tree of evolution, but they're more akin to a gorilla than they are to human beings.
Wasn't it like back in the late 1800s, early 1900s? I know I'm no expert, but when they first found gorillas, they in the jungles, to be able to walk through a jungle and all of a sudden come upon creatures that look like humans, but they're all hair. I mean, I'm sure that freaked them out when they first saw a gorilla for the first time.
Right.
But do you think, because I mean, gorillas, apes, and monkeys, they're very intelligent. I had a friend that had a monkey, and it learns how to turn the TV on and, you know, turn the microwave on. I mean, it baffles me how smart they can be if they just have like young children of being able to teach them. It could be like an ape lineage or that. I mean, I wish we could find one. I just wish we could find one. So at least at least in our lifetime, it's like the UFO. You know, it's like in my lifetime, I want them to come down, land right in front of everybody and said, "We're here." You know, it's like a Bigfoot. It's like, you know, I don't want to kill a Bigfoot, but it'd be nice to be able to finally see what you've learned about all your life. So, it's interesting.
Well, I kind of have a theory about that. Is I did a comparison of mountain gorillas and Bigfoot. I call it apples and oranges. And the mountain gorillas, the only similarities they have with Bigfoot is just in appearance.
Right.
And I think that a theory of mine is that Bigfoot migrated from Africa into Europe. Okay. And going from jungle to forest, the Bigfoot would have to learn how to kill prey,
right,
like deers, whatever. And that's how they became bipedal, to free up their arms, because they can, one theory of mine, they can throw a rock and take a deer down from a fair distance. But moving into forest and become bipedal to free up their arms to eat animals, and the animal protein actually increased their intelligence, their brain capacity. And eventually they moved across ice floes into North America through Canada and Iceland. That's well, just a theory, but.
Because, I mean, in the Himalayas, you know, they have the Yetis. And I would assume that if the gorillas or whatever moved into the Himalayas, that would have been a big shock to the system going from a tropical to freezing. So do you think?
Well, actually, I think the Yeti and the Yeren are relic Gigantopithecus.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Which Gigantopithecus is a orangutan
right.
relative as opposed to full gorilla lineage. But the like the Yeren in China, the way they describe them, they're describing an orangutan by the coloring and that type of thing. So those could be relic Gigantopithecus populations.
I mean, that's possible. That's possible because, I mean, there's a lot of similarities. It's just, you know, but it would be, like you said, from the ape family.
So, exactly.
So when people come to you and say, oh, wait a minute, somebody, I'm looking, I'm going to ask my co-host here in a second because we only have about 7 minutes left. And my co-host are the people in the chat room, and I really appreciate you guys always asking questions. And I'm going to go ask a few before we get out of here. But Jesse, we kind of already answered this, but I'm going to have Mike answer it again. But Jesse was saying, are Bigfoots an ET race or some kind of ET bodyguard? And I have to say before you answer that, Mike, a lot of times Bigfoot sightings or hotspots are also UFO hotspots. Why do you think that is?
I watched the Expedition X, or yeah, the new Bigfoot Expedition show,
mm-hmm.
and they were in Oregon, and they were in Bigfoot active areas, and they saw lights in the woods, and they were associating those with Bigfoot. They could be associating those as UFOs.
Right.
But I have seen the Brown Mountain Lights. Have you ever heard of the Brown Mountain Lights?
The Brown Mountain Lights. I have not.
Yes. Okay.
Explain that.
Google that. But Brown Mountain Lights are like spirit lights and been reported for hundreds of years. And I actually had the opportunity to see these. We went there and went up on the mountain and parked and watched. And what these are just orbs of light in the woods that would blink on and blink off. They were multicolored, but I'm sure these were naturally occurring, but of unknown origin. And when I saw the lights on this TV program, that's exactly what I saw in North Carolina in the Brown Mountain Lights. So what they're seeing and associating, I think it's just two different, totally different things. I think these lights, like I said, are naturally occurring, but of unknown origin. Now, they've reported Bigfoots coming out of UFOs or that type of thing. Or
right.
And why would something that's not even known to use fire, how could they travel the universe? That's, you know, that's a question I would have. And they've been here for a very long time.
Right, right. Yeah, they've definitely been here for, you know, longer than the tales of Bigfoots have been here. I mean, we've heard about them for thousands of years of sightings.
Right.
Well, we only have just a few minutes left. So, Mike, what made you want to write this book? Was it just, you know, kind of like your diary of putting things together and say, you know, I want to share it with the world? Or is this kind of why did you decide to put this together, this book, right?
I wrote this book because there was, when we would go, we would find so much out there. And so many interpretations on what things could be. Like I have found stick structures that I am sure are artistic expression, you know, that type of thing. And the multitude of configurations of these structures is amazing because you can find thousands of different ones, right. But you can find some that are the same from one end of the country to the other. Like it's learned behavior.
Right.
It's just like I said, the information that's out there, the information that I've found, it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of, you know, stories and theories, and that's why I love to hear different people's perspective, because everybody has their own journey, and that's why we have people like you on to hear your thoughts. And what if somebody decided, you know, one of our listeners or viewers said, you know what, I think I'm gonna I've heard about, you know, Old Brown's place up in the mountains, you know, they see a lot of hairy creatures up there, but they want to maybe do some UFO tracking. What's the best way to start, and what kind of equipment do you need and all that to make sure you're prepared to do the Bigfoot hunting?
All I take with me is a tape measure and a camera. that's all. But I do all of my Bigfoot hunting during the day, because I don't think they're nocturnal. I think if they do run around at night, they have like a segmented sleeper or something along those lines. They don't have the adaptations to be fully nocturnal. So I go in the daytime, and I've encountered in the daytime. I've been growled at in the daytime. The whoops and the screams and everything like that I've encountered has been in the daytime. But if you're going to start looking for Bigfoot, what I've recommended is drive around these old country roads, look for bent trees, and then look for suspicious structures that don't seem natural. And that'll start pointing you in the right direction. But take, like I said, take a camera, take a tape measure, maybe stop by Walmart and get some plaster of Paris if you find a track to cast, but that'll get you going.
And do you recommend any type of Bigfoot clubs or online gatherings where people trade, you know, Bigfoot information?
Yeah, the BFRO, which is like the organization. But on Facebook, there's all kinds of Bigfoot groups, and they go by region. There's Georgia, Tennessee, Ohio, whatever. If you want to get with these guys, join these groups, they might be able to point you to hotspots in their areas. Like I said, Salt Fork was a hotspot in Ohio.
Right.
They might be able to point you towards that or whatever to get you going.
Well, I have to say this has been great. I love your story. I love your encounter. And thank you for sharing that with us. You can go out and get the book, On the Trail of Bigfoot. Where can we find it?
It's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes and Noble. And it's available, I have it written down here, IndieBound, I-N-D-I-E, Bound online. You can also get it there.
All right. Do you have any, like, a website, social media people can follow you for any updates?
I have an author's page on Facebook. It's just author Mike Dupler. And I post events and that type of thing from time to time.
Any part two?
It's a thought.
All right. Well,
I have some wild theories that I'm considering. But that's just kind of in the back of my mind, because there's some questions and there's some dots that need connected that leads to a whole different area. So
that's great. Well, thank you, Mike. We really appreciate you being on Truth Be Told. So we'll talk to you soon and have you back when you got some more information.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And okay. You guys, please go out and get this book, as you can see, On the Trail of Bigfoot. And for this coming June, you guys can get your virtual tickets to Contact in the Desert. Again, I'm going to be a host, and I'm going to be interviewing a lot of the speakers. I can't wait to share that with you. But we're also going to be giving away virtual tickets on Truth Be Told. So make sure you go to our Instagram. We just created it, so we'd love to have you follow us, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to our website, truthbetoldworldwide.com, and follow us on all the podcast outlets. And we appreciate you. And don't forget to watch us if you're in the Boston area. Truth Be Told is on WCRN TV Channel 31. And until then, till next time, this is Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.